You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 23rd of September 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, I am very pleased to say today, after I think about a month off, I do have my co-host with me, Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, good afternoon to you, sir. It's a beautiful day here. How are things over there in the east of the country?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day here as well, actually. I've had a very enjoyable weekend, actually.
Excellent. Yeah, I've had a pretty good time over the last couple of weeks as well. And over the last week, we've had all sorts of things happening with Brexit. We've had this Supreme Court case, which is going on, which was a response to these Scottish judges being extremely partisan and political and deciding that proroguing Parliament was somehow not something Boris Johnson could do, even though it's a normal procedure that's what every Parliament does when it wants to announce it has a new policy. But because Boris Johnson wants to leave the EU, they decided that he must have some ulterior motive, and somehow that means that it's illegal, which is absolute nonsense. You don't look at the way that people are thinking and try to guess what their motives were for carrying out a normal procedure of Parliament. Yet that's what they've done. And we're in the middle at the moment of the Supreme Court deliberating on this. And I had high hopes that they were going to say, look, this is nonsense. This is not a matter of law. This is a matter of, for the politicians, which are separate to the matter of law and the law courts. But from watching it on Thursday and Friday and looking at the press reports, they may actually allow what the judges have said in Scotland. They may actually come down on the side of the judges. What do you make of this, Max? I know you've been looking into this as well.
Yeah, it looks very much, certainly if you go by what some of the weekend newspapers are saying, it looks as if there could be a decision on in favour of Gina Miller and the group that she represents. And this will create a very unusual constitutional situation where, as far as Boris Johnson is concerned, his prorogation will have been held to be invalid. And I suppose what probably will happen after that is that Parliament will probably be recalled, and Parliament will then have to decide, you know, quite how they're going to proceed from there on. And Boris is in a very sort of difficult situation in that the Remainers are in a situation where they have a majority in the House of Commons, and they could effectively pass any kind of legislation between now then and when the 31st of October comes round. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Of course, the government's legal representatives have said that if the prorogation is deemed to have been illegal, that the Prime Minister could prorogue Parliament again. And I suppose what then might happen in order to counter that and to prevent that is that Parliament, once recalled, might pass legislation to remove the right of the Prime Minister to prorogue Parliament, which would then be a very marked deviation from the constitutional procedures that have existed for hundreds of years. And so we are moving gradually more and more into a constitutional grey area where this sort of a situation has never occurred before. And in times gone by in history where this kind of thing has happened in the past, it has resulted in things like the English Civil War, for example. You know, heaven forbid that anything like that should happen. But if you get into a situation where The government is in total opposition to Parliament, and Parliament is in total opposition to the will of the people as expressed in a referendum that they promised they would accept the results of, then we are into a situation that can only then be resolved by an election or by some other contest. And let's hope it doesn't turn out to be some other form of contest, because that would be unthinkable. And so I would hope that if Parliament are going to or do succeed in having this prorogation deemed illegal or invalid, that they then have the decency to then call an election so that the matter can be settled peacefully and constitutionally. It would be a terrible thing if they decided to defy the will of the people and continue to humiliate the government and continue to work towards subordinating the British government to a foreign power, which would, as I say, be an unthinkable thing for them to do. But who knows? The unthinkable is happening nowadays, who knows where it's going to end, basically.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that at the moment you've got the Conservative Party that are in power, but because 20 of them have been kicked out of the Conservative Party for voting on the side of the Remainers, the Conservative Party doesn't actually have a majority, which means that they can't govern. And the only solution to that is to have a general election, yet the other parties are refusing to allow a general election to take place. This is just unbelievable. I mean, could they not have foreseen in the past that something like this might happen, and it might not be such a good idea to give the ability to have a general election, hand it over to these other parties? I think they've got to have, 75% of the government have got to vote to say whether you're going to have a general election. But if the actual party that is in power doesn't have enough power to govern, and the 75% of government won't actually vote to allow a general election, then effectively what you've got all these parties that are in opposition that are running things, and they've never actually been voted in. In actual fact, they lost the vote, and yet somehow they've managed to hijack Parliament. They've managed to hijack the democracy. That was one point that I wanted to make. And the second point is, we seem to be forgetting here that this proroguing of Parliament was only for 4 days. That's all it was for. The reason why they're actually not sitting right now is because it's the conference season. I mean, as I'm speaking, we've got the Labour conference, which is on. Last week we had the Liberal Democrat conference, and I believe next week we will have the Conservative Party conference. And every year they take 3 weeks off to have their party conferences. And all the proroguing has done is add another 4 days to that time off, which, so that when they come back, it's a new session of Parliament, and Boris Johnson can put forward his new policy objectives for the Conservative Party, which is what the proroguing of Parliament is for. Now, this is why I don't understand what these judges are trying to decide upon. Are they saying that Boris Johnson doesn't have any policies? Does he not have any policy objectives? Has he not shown the Queen his policy objectives? Because that's what he has to do. In order to get the Queen's permission to prorogue Parliament, he has to go and tell her his policy objectives, because that's what the whole point of it is. So even though he's done all that, which shows you that this is all legal and proper, they're saying, oh yes, but he might have had another motive in his mind when he did that. He's killing two birds with one stone, which in any other situation in life, you would think, well, that's a good thing, isn't it? That you're actually going to achieve two things with one manoeuvre. It's all unbelievable. I mean, how can you have the country being run by the opposition, which is effectively what we have, and the opposition holding the party that have been voted in to ransom and saying, well, we're not going to give you a general election?
This is a situation where we have the judiciary challenging Parliament, or challenging the government, for supremacy as far as the country is concerned. And this is, to some extent, a consequence of our membership of the European Union, because within the European Union, we've had the the European courts, and European courts have been placed higher than any court of the land here in the UK. That has been part of, you know, a requirement of our membership of the European Union. And prior to our membership of the European Union, Parliament was the highest court of the land, because legal cases were held up to the point where they reached the high courts, and then they were then referred to Parliament for a decision to be made. But once we joined the European Union, instead of the referral going to Parliament, the referral then went to the European courts. And so we're now in a situation where, or we have been for the last 40 years in a situation where the judges who've sat in the European courts have had supremacy over our own Parliament. And what's happened is that the senior judges, it would appear in this country, senior members of the judiciary in this country, have quite liked the idea that that they are superior to Parliament, and they can decide which laws are lawful and which laws aren't lawful. And so now we have this constitutional first, where we have a British-based court challenging the government for supremacy here in the UK. And again, it's another aspect of the fact that we have, as a result of our membership of the European Union, we have drifted into this grey area where, with regard to what's legal and what's not legal. It is a very dangerous area to be in, because, as I said before, you know, if eventually the warring parties don't actually come to some sort of an accommodation with themselves, so that one or the other is deemed to be the senior authority, then it can only end then in some kind of extra parliamentary contest, which, as I said earlier on, has in the past ended in civil war. So shocking. We are in a very dangerous area, and the judges really that are hearing this case need to accept, in my view, the fact that, to a certain extent, the arranging of various events and things like the proroguing of Parliament will, to some extent, be determined for political advantage, and that. That's the way it should be, and that it should be the prerogative of the government to exercise the privileges of government to their advantage, should they feel that necessary. Because, as I say, otherwise we're into this sort of constitutional grey area.
That's a really good point, Max, there, that I think that you're making there, that these, you know, these mechanisms, they are there for the government to use to their advantage, because they are the government, or they are the party that is in power. And this is a perfectly, yes. This is a perfectly normal mechanism. It's being used in a perfectly normal way, that they need to announce new policies. They've had the longest parliamentary session since the Civil War, and it needs to be stopped. Now, I watched some of this as it was being heard in the Supreme Court, and the questions were along the lines of, well, does this mechanism mean that the Parliament aren't sitting? And the answer was, well, yes, of course, that's what the mechanism is for. It is to shut down Parliament so that they don't sit. And then he was saying, well, does that mean that they're not going to be able to hear about the EU? They're not going to be able to discuss Brexit? Well, yes, it means they're not going to be able to discuss anything, because it's been prorogued, which is the normal mechanism, before announcing a policy. I think a lot of this as well, it's too complicated for people to really follow, and they are relying on that. But as you say, Max, it's basically putting these judges up above Parliament, when it's Parliament that makes the laws. And also, a question I wanted to ask you about is actually about this Supreme Court. Isn't that some kind of a new creation over the last 40 years? Because I thought the top court, as you said, is the EU courts now. So what is this Supreme Court? Because they don't seem to have all the pomp and ceremony and majesty of the usual law courts. Do you know anything about their tradition, this Supreme Court?
Well, my knowledge of it is only very similar to your own, that it is something that's quite new. And I suspect that it is a court that's been set up as a result of our membership of the European Union, so that there is within Britain what is regarded as a Supreme Court, that cases can be heard in before they're then referred to the Supreme Court in Europe, basically.
Right. So it's just the go-between before it then goes to the EU, who are obviously going to be partisan and come down on the side of the European Union. What a pickle we've got ourselves in.
And as far as the ability of the government is concerned, prior to the introduction of the fixed term for parliamentary terms of 5 years, the right to call a general election was entirely vested in the Prime Minister. So the Prime Minister could at any point, when the Prime Minister considered that their party was popular in the polls, they could call a snap general election and then benefit from that and get an increased parliamentary majority. And when but that was regarded as being unfair. But somebody's got to determine when the general elections are held. And if you have to have, as we've already ascertained and discovered, if you have to have a two-thirds or greater majority in Parliament in favour of general election before a general election can be called, then it is going to be prone to creating the kind of situation that we're in now. And so the constitutional grey area that we're in now is a direct result of the attempts in the past to curtail the power of government. And so previous governments, prior to our joining the European Union and during the early years of our membership of the European Union, in those parliaments, the Prime Minister had the right to call a general election at any time. With the introduction of the fixed parliamentary term, they decided that they would take away some of the power of the Prime Minister. I'm not sure whether it was a Conservative or a Labour government that was in power at the point where all this was introduced, but the upshot of it is basically that the power has been taken away from the Prime Minister alone and been placed in the hands of Parliament. However, as far as the relationship between the Prime Minister and the Queen is concerned, the Queen normally follows the requests made of her by the Prime Minister. And so in the past, what's happened prior to the 5 year parliamentary term legislation, prior to that, a Prime Minister would go to the Queen and just request that the Queen dissolves Parliament and calls a general election, and the Queen would just automatically do it. And it would be done for strictly political reasons, because the Prime Minister at that point would know that they had a majority in the country, and so therefore they wanted to convert that majority into a majority in Parliament. So it was an accepted premise that the Prime Minister would exercise the right to dissolve Parliament, to call a general election, would exercise that for political purposes, and that political purposes would govern the timing of general elections. And now we're in a situation where not only has the Prime Minister had the ability to call Parliament removed, so that can no longer be exercised based upon his or her political judgment, we're now in a situation where the ability to prorogue Parliament is also now being called into question. And so it's taking power away from the government and giving power to Parliament. And that would be great if Parliament was actually representative of the people. But the situation we're in at the moment is the situation where the majority in Parliament is diametrically the opposite of the majority that exists in the country for Brexit. And so we're in a situation where Parliament is defying the will of the people, and quite openly defying the will of the people. And as I said earlier on, that's a very dangerous situation to be in, because unless Parliament decides to accept the principle that the people are sovereign and that the sovereignty of the people is just executed through the facility of Parliament, rather than Parliament being the sovereign entity, Unless they're prepared to accept that, then there's going to be a contest between the people and Parliament for who is sovereign. And that contest can only be held in one of two ways, either electorally through a general election or through a civil war. And that's really what they've got to get their heads around and make the right decision about.
Well, you've also got the BBC and the mainstream media that are also colluding with this government that is diametrically opposed to the people's interests and are coming down on the side of these Remainers and are desperately trying to get people to support Labour and the Liberal Democrats and desperately trying to prevent Brexit, even though that Brexit vote was an overwhelming vote, an overwhelming majority. When you actually look at the number of constituencies that voted for it, when you look at the numbers of the people that voted for it, and it's totally against the wishes of these MPs. You've got MPs that are in constituencies that overwhelmingly voted to leave the EU that are going directly against what their constituencies have voted for and are trying to sabotage it. Well, I mean, we've been talking about this now for, it seems like, the last 2 months. It's formed a large part of the Era in Britannia podcast. I guess one positive thing you could say about this is that it has really got everybody interested in politics. I don't think anybody really used to bother watching them in the Houses of Parliament, certainly wouldn't be watching them in the Supreme Court. And yet the whole country has been watching all of this and learning about the way that our political system works. And I do think that's been a positive thing. It's affected everything else. I mean, last week we had the last night of the proms, which is a very, very patriotic get together. You basically got all this music that's provided, all this orchestral music, and there are cheap tickets available, so that it's basically so that everybody gets a chance to go and see the sort of music that you would only get to see and hear if you were very, very upper class. Normally, that I think that's the basis for this last night of the proms, and they play Jerusalem and Rule Britannia and all this patriotic stuff, and there's loads of flag waving and people are dressed up in Union Jacks, and this took place last week, and there were two scandals that occurred with it that were actually to do with this. And the first scandal was to do with the Remainers, and they got loads of money together. I've got a quote here about it. One flag outnumbered all the others by a country kilometre, the blue and yellow standard of the EU. This was the fruit of months of careful planning by a well-organised pro-Remain group called the EU Flag Mafia, who had launched an online crowdfunding appeal to produce 50,000 EU flags and then hand them out for free at events like last night of the proms. All those arriving outside the Royal Albert Hall on Saturday evening were given handfuls. When I asked the student who gave me mine if she also had any Union flags, she gave me a blank look and suggested I could try buying one. I did find a chap near the main entrance flogging Union flags at £3 a go, but he wasn't happy about the free competition. And these EU flags they had were huge, and they draped them all around the hall to try and make it look like all these people were loyal to the EU instead of loyal to Britain. And I believe the police arrested some of the Brexiteers as well. The Remainers tried to grab the flags of the Brexiteers, just like the Antifa tried to grab the flags of nationalists when they go out on a demonstration, and the nationalists defend themselves, and it's the nationalists that get arrested. The same thing happened at the proms, and it was the patriots that were arrested. And all you saw on the BBC was all these huge EU flags there. I mean, absolute treason. This is supposed to be one of the most patriotic nights of the year, where everybody is very, very proud to be British. And it was just full of the European Union flag. It was an absolute scandal. Yeah, did you catch any of this, Max, last week?
No, I don't watch the last night of the proms. I just to me, it is it has for many years now just smacked of plastic patriotism. It's the sort of patriotism that doesn't really involve anything genuinely nationalistic. It is just an excuse for people to sing patriotic songs without there being any real emotion behind it.
I guess a real understanding behind it. I mean, really, I suppose it gives them a chance to share in the wonderful feeling that is patriotism, but without really understanding the ideology behind it. You know, you've got a big crowd of people there that are proud to be British, but, you know, most of them think that what's great about being British is multiculturalism. But at least they are waving the Union Jack flag. They're not, you know, standing around saying, oh, I hate being British. What about slavery? What about the British Empire? You know, they are actually being proud patriots, which I think it is a positive thing that we have get-togethers like this. And the second scandal was at the end, where they sing Rule Britannia. And Jamie Barton, an American singer and self-professed queer girl with a nose ring, she unfurled the rainbow flag during her performance. And she said that this was because she wanted to make a very clear statement of pride. So you got the final song, you got Rule Britannia, which is all about Britons never, ever being slaves. And then the woman that sings it is an American, and she's waving this rainbow flag at the top, which is saying, you know, the sodomites are at the top of the pile. They're the ones that we're all underneath, basically. And the Union Jack flag is underneath that. Even the European Union flag is underneath that. The very top flag of all was the flag of sodomy. And, you know, you can just imagine all the elderly people watching this and being absolutely horrified and scandalized at it, that this woman would have the cheek to hijack, you know, a celebration of being British and make it into a homosexual festival, I guess. Did you hear about this? I mean, this was quite a scandal. It was in quite a few national news outlets.
No, I haven't heard about that, no.
Well,
can't any comments on that?
Yeah, I was just, you know, this last night of the Proms, I can remember seeing that years ago and being very moved by the music, actually. And I wasn't a nationalist at the time, and seeing all this flag waving and thinking, wow, that's really quite something there. And, you know, and now it's been hijacked.
There are a number of patriotic songs that get sung at the last night of the Proms, and with a number of them, there are verses that were originally written during the time of the Empire, which are very sort of patriotic nationalistic, and quite often these verses are the ones that are missed out, and so they only sing the less martial, shall I say, the less martial verses of the patriotic songs. And one that springs to mind, and that I wrote an article about a couple of years ago, is the hymn "I Vow to Thee My Country," which is normally sung as if it has only two verses, but there is actually a third verse, which is the verse that's never sung or not sung nowadays. I'll just read you the words to it, because it makes it quite clear then. I heard my country calling away across the sea, across the waste of waters she calls and calls to me. Her sword is girded at her side, her helmet on her head, and around her feet are lying the dying and the dead. I hear the noise of battle, the thunder of the guns. I haste to thee, my mother, a son among thy sons.
Fantastic.
And you can't imagine the BBC ever broadcasting anything quite so martial as that nowadays. But that was the third verse that used to be sung in the good old days.
Isn't there something about unruly Scots as well in God Save the Queen? Isn't there a verse that puts the Scots down or something?
I think there might be, yes. But there are a number of patriotic songs that have got verses that were written presumably during the Victorian period, or perhaps even earlier than that, where those verses are deliberately scrubbed out. And if you Google, as I've just done as we've been talking, because I just wanted to be reminded of the wording here, what you'll find is that you'll have to Google and then Google and Google and Google several times before you can eventually find the forbidden version of these songs. But they're still there. They're still can be found if you're prepared to look. And there we are.
That's a real shame, you know, that they're making politically correct versions of these songs, politically correct versions of nursery rhymes. And while they're doing that, they're glorifying black rap music, singing about murdering people. You've got these crime gangs in London that they glorify. I mean, rap music really doesn't have anything positive, I think, that you can actually say about it. And they had an awards ceremony last week, the Mercury Music Awards. And I was watching the BBC News, and the BBC News were saying, oh, isn't this wonderful? Look at this rapper that's won this award, and he's brought his mother on the stage. Isn't that wonderful of him? And that was all you heard about it on the news. And when I was watching that, I thought, well, it wouldn't be his father, would it, with him being black? You know, their fathers don't tend to sort of hang around. And really, that's who it should be on the stage there, if somebody's helped you to get through to your music career. But he had his mother on the stage, and then the next day I was looking through the news and I discovered that the whole album was dedicated to this black rapper's brother, who was a murderer, who's actually doing time in jail, a life sentence, for stabbing to death a young lad. I think, yeah, the young lad was 15 years old. It was a gang stabbing. And this black rapper had the cheek to even mention this when he was getting the award. And the mother of the lad that was stabbed, I mean, she was absolutely horrified at this, that, you know, she could be watching the television and then she sees that this guy wins an award for writing an album in honour of the guy that stabbed her son. I've got a quote here from the Daily Mail about it. The mother of a teenager fatally stabbed by the brother of a rapper has criticised the musician for paying tribute to the killer at an awards ceremony. Rapper Dave, whose full name is David Oroboza Omarigi, said his brother, Christopher, was the inspiration behind his album after picking up the 2019 Mercury Prize this week. The debut record, called Psychodrama, even features the voice of his brother, who is serving a life sentence for the murder of Sofyan Belamuadan. The boy, 15, was stabbed 9 times in the lungs and chest by a teenage gang dubbed the Samurai Tube Killers, in front of commuters at Victoria Station in London in 2010. Christopher Oroboza Omarigi, now 26, was the ringleader. He was jailed in 2012 for a minimum of 18 years by a judge who said he failed to show any kind of remorse. And now he's being mentioned in award ceremonies. Last night, Sofyan's mother, Nina Galen, said it was disgusting that Dave received an award for an album featuring her son's killer. In this sad society now, killers are seen as heroes, she told Sky News. Christopher will probably get an award too when he comes out of prison. Whatever I say isn't going to change anything. I lost my son forever. Nothing will bring him back. On the final track of Psychodrama, 21-year-old Dave raps about being physically sick on the day his brother was jailed. The musician from Streatham in South London also appears to question the verdict in his brother's trial, rapping, "Is it survival of the fittest, or is he a killer?" Dave goes on to describe his brother as my hero. Asked how she felt about the track entitled Drama, Miss Galen said, "It's disgusting how his brother is on that from prison and Dave still got an award. No one in their right mind would listen to those sort of songs." So he's even featured on the album, and he's being name-checked at the awards ceremony. And he's hardly showing remorse for this, is he? And this was a child that was murdered by a gang, by a mob that murdered him. Did you hear about this, Max?
I didn't hear about that, no. But it is a terrible indictment, really, of our music industry that they are prepared to make awards to people who advocate violence and who advocate criminality. You know, it's been several decades now during which increasingly pop music and various genres of pop music have been associated with crime and with criminality. And it's something really that the music industry needs to start to take responsibility for, because, you know, they are creating a culture of violence, and then they're sort of looking around wide-eyed and innocently and saying, oh, we don't know how all this violence is happening. It just seems to just be happening, and we don't know how, and we don't know why. when in reality, anybody with two brain cells can see that, you know, if you create a culture in which crime and criminality is glorified, then crime and criminality will start to prevail in your society. And it sort of links up with the other rapper that we need to talk about today, which who was nominated for the Mercury Prize, that was and who performed at the Mercury Prize ceremony that was held at the event in Apollo in London earlier on this week, which is a rapper called Slow Ty. I'm not quite sure how he gets his name, but we can only imagine. This rapper who is reportedly of mixed Bajan and Irish descent. Bajan, of course, being the posh ethnic way of saying that he's Barbadian. No longer is it felt cool to refer to yourself as Barbadian. Now you have to call yourself Bajan, because that's the cool way of saying it, apparently. But anyway, he's of mixed Bajan and Irish descent. And he has performed a song which whilst he was wearing a T-shirt that said "Fuck Boris," and then at the end of the performance proceeded, so we're told, to lift up, and I've seen sort of bits of video of this, lifted up and held aloft to the audience a mock severed head of Boris Johnson, and apparently called out to the audience, "Fuck Boris Johnson, fuck everything." And apparently this is all part of an album that he's released recently, which is called Nothing Great About Britain. And again, it's the music industry that's driving this kind of thing, music industry that's making these kind of notions and these kind of ideas fashionable and regarded as cool by young people. And it's the music industry that really ought to think ahead and think, you know, where is this taking us? Once you sort of descend down this this kind of slippery slope towards the disgusting and the depraved, you know, where does it all end? And the, you know, it's interesting that this particular rapper is famed for the genres of music that are described as British rap, political hip hop, and grime. You know, I don't know what grime is supposed to be, but grime doesn't sound very uplifting, does it? Doesn't sound like the sort of artistic thing that anybody ought to spend any time focusing on. And yet, you know, grime apparently is a genre of pop music nowadays. And this guy, it's one of his specialities, presumably.
Yeah, and drill's the other one, isn't it? They banned the drill music, but to think you've got both of these at the same award ceremony. You got one of them winning a prize for $25,000 for making a song, making an album rather, featuring a murderer who's doing a life sentence for killing a child, and he's glorifying that. And then at the end of the award ceremony, you've got this other rapper, this Slow Ty, who is holding up the head of the Prime Minister. And that's rather comedian, isn't it? She did it with Donald Trump's head. Sorry, go on, Max.
Well, I think that just the music industry is creating a kind of a cultural cesspit. What they need to think about is if this Slow Ty chap hadn't been part Barbadian or part Bajan, as they like to call it nowadays, if he hadn't been that, had he been a white musician, and had he held up a mock severed head of Gina Miller, for example, or Luciana Berger, then the following day there would have been frontline and headline newspapers in the throughout the whole news media that this had echoes of the murder of Joe Cox. We only have to think back a couple of years or so to the point where political group National Action was prescribed by the Home Office for expressing views that were supportive of Thomas Mayer in his killing of MP Joe Cox. And it's only sort of 2 years later that it apparently appears to be quite acceptable for a a musician to wave a severed head of a politician, not just any politician, not just any MP, but the Prime Minister, and act in a very aggressive way towards the Prime Minister, which could be construed as a an incitement to violence. It could be construed as an incitement to a breach of the country's current terrorism legislation, because we have to remember that to use the threat of violence for political purposes is terrorism under the terms of the Terrorism Act 2000. And so I think somebody from the Crown Prosecution Service needs to take a close look at what's been going on here, because if it is right, and if it was right for the group National Action to have been prescribed on the basis of the fact that they merely expressed support for the actions of Thomas Mayer, then for somebody to dance around on stage on national TV waving a mock severed head of the Prime Minister, that must fall into the same category, I would have thought. And they need to give some serious consideration to that and whether or not some kind of action ought to be taken against the perpetrator.
Well, and just look at the title of his album as well, Nothing Great About Britain. I mean, what is this doing? Making it onto the shortlist of, you know, Mercury Prize Award, Music Award for this year for British artists, and you've got someone, Nothing Great About Britain. You know, these guys are going to give him an award for that? He's you know, isn't that something good about Great Britain, that, you know, they've got an award ceremony that they give out to these so-called artists? And then they wonder when they have TV award ceremonies and they have young black actors at TV award ceremonies where they're expecting to win an award for best new actor, and they threaten to stab the other actors. I mean, this just happened 2 weeks back, Max. I don't know if you heard about that. It was an actor in one of these soap operas, and he went to an award ceremony, and he just started threatening the white guy and said he was going to stab him. And he didn't actually have a knife on him. And he'd just been in a storyline about stabbing, where he was in the news talking about how proud he was to have been trusted with this storyline to try and stop kids from carrying knives. And there he is at an awards party threatening to stab someone. Well, where would he get the idea for that from? Well, here you've got, you know, this black rapper holding up the decapitated head of the Prime Minister and everybody glorifying that and thinking it's wonderful. You've got the other rapper making his album all about his brother that just stabbed someone. And what does the BBC say? Oh, what wonderful guys these are. What a wonderful person he is. He brought his mother on stage. I mean, it's an absolute scandal, isn't it?
It is. Much is made when people look back at the history of the Third Reich in Germany, of the fact that that there were book burnings where the Nazi Party organised the burning of books written by authors that were considered to be aberrant and what have you. And a lot of these authors were Jews. And the comment that's always made is that where they one day burn books, they will one day burn people. And with regard to this parading around of mock severed heads, I think that using that same logic again, you could also say that where they one day parade around on the stage with mock severed heads, they will one day parade around on the stage with actual severed heads. And because that's it's applying logic to that same sort of trajectory, isn't it?
That's exactly what they're doing. And it all centers around the black community as well. I mean, you're saying this guy is mixed race, but both of them are black, and this guy that put, you know, that was threatening to stab this other actor at the awards ceremony, he was black. I mean, like it or not, I mean, this centers around the black community. Grime music is black music. Drill music, which is, you know, the gang music that they make, that is black music. It is a crime that they just get involved in, and they glorify it, and they win awards for it.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's that the music industry needs to take stock of what it's doing and to think seriously about where it's going and what sort of a society we're going to end up with if we continue to travel down the road that we're traveling down. There is a need for somebody to review things so that the progress of our culture can become far more positive and wholesome in the future. And that's something that a nationalist government would make a priority. But one would hope that politicians of other political persuasions would also want that as well. And there is a need for them to show their mettle and to take the music industry to task over this sort of thing. It would be interesting to if the same sort of legislation that exists within the Terrorism Act 2000 was also applied to the lyrics of pop songs, so that this sort of thing could be brought to a very sudden halt. I think it's high time that was done. You know, how many more black people, how many more young black people are going to have to be stabbed on the streets of London before eventually politicians decide to actually really do something effective about it instead of just, crying into their perfumed handkerchiefs. They need to actually do something serious about it.
Well, they have their black privilege, don't they? I mean, you made the point there that if this had been a white singer and he had been holding up Gina Miller's head, you know, the next day it would have been racist attack, or if it had been Luciana Berger, it would have been anti-Semitic attack. And there's nothing done about this because it's an ethnic minority and because they're on the left. There were a group that were banned from playing at Glastonbury last year because they were singing a song about killing the Tories and killing the Tory party. Again, nothing was done about it. You've got that American comedian who held up Donald Trump's head. Nothing was done about it. You know, nothing will get done about it when it's people that are on the left that are making these violent threats. And I think more and more people are realizing that as well and thinking, oh, hang on a minute. You know, how what would the response be if that was to be Gina Miller's head there? And that's what we need to point out to people as well. And you know, these criminals, they're not being treated in the way that they should be. They're not being punished, and the victims aren't being looked after. If you think about that mother there who had to see this on the television, the glorification of her son's murderer. More and more now, you've got victims that are complaining that they're just not seeing justice. And the response to that, I found a shocking response to that from Sadiq Khan, who wants to ensure that female criminals don't actually get prison time. And his reasoning for this is because it would help out the criminals' families. I've got an article here, and nowhere in it does it mention the victims of these crimes. His only concern is for the people that have carried out the crimes themselves. Labour's London Mayor Sadiq Khan has launched a pilot programme which would see women who have committed lower-level non-violent offences such as thieves and shoplifters avoid jail in favour of receiving mental health and substance abuse support. Well, that doesn't sound too bad until you find out what the mental health and substance abuse support is. According to a statement released by City Hall, the mayor believes that rather than punishing women for crimes they have committed, a non-custodial intervention would help them onto a more positive path and reduce female reoffending rates, the scheme being introduced to address the difficulties facing women in the criminal justice system. While the mayor's office points to studies which say that women are more likely to reoffend after short prison sentences for minor offences, women still continue to be just a tiny proportion of the prison population at just 4.6% with recent government statistics. Well, hang on a minute. Don't women make up 50% of the population? Doesn't that mean that somehow all these women are getting off? Doesn't that mean that 45% of women must be getting off if they don't actually make up 50% of the prison population? Isn't that the logic that we're told to think about when we're told that there are far more blacks in prison than there should be? Isn't that telling us that the police force are racist? And isn't this telling us that the police force are just anti-men? They're misandrists. They're locking all these men up and allowing these women to get off. I mean, that's the first thing I thought when I heard that women only make up 4.6% of the prison population. But being piloted over the next 2 years in the London boroughs of Camden, Islington, Lambeth and Southwark, instead of women who have committed lower-level non-violent offences being given time in prison, as their male counterparts who commit the same crimes would be, women and girls will be referred to specialist support services in mental health and substance misuse. Specialists will assess the needs of the women and provide the relevant support and target the factors that can influence reoffending rates among women, such as mental health, relationships, and financial security. So they're going to pay them. As part of a joined-up approach, the police, prisons, local authorities, and rehabilitation organisations will work together to help women build financial stability, find jobs, and safe and secure accommodation, the mayor's office added. So what they're going to do is, when these women commit crimes, they're going to give them a house, they're going to find them a job, they're going to give them loans, they're going to pay off their debts. I mean, they're basically going to reward these women. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's what it is, isn't it? It's a reward. Build financial stability. And just finally here, the reasoning for this that he comes up with, Deputy Mayor for Policing and Crime, Sophie Linden, said this scheme was London getting tough on the causes of crime. I mean, how can they say that's getting tough on the causes of crime to reward female criminals? Well, Commander Julian Bennett, the Met's police lead for detention and prosecution, said the Female Offender Diversion Project pilot is an important part of the Met's activity to support our key role in preventing crime in London. By tackling the underlying factors that lead to a high proportion of women reoffending following their conviction for low harm offences. So the underlying factor is that these women aren't happy with what they've got and they want to go out and steal what they want. So to prevent them from going out stealing, they're just going to give them it anyway. Scrapping prison sentences for women for all but the most serious crimes is backed by the Liberal Democrats, it would be. However, the Conservative government also supports a step change in the way women are dealt with by the justice system. Former Justice Secretary David Gawke unveiled in June 2018 proposals for a pilot scheme that would prioritise rehabilitation for women over punishment for their crimes, saying, "We will shift from prisons to women's centres, which focus on the full range of support services, beginning with 5 pilots across England and Wales. I want this strategy to be the start of a shift in attitudes to the way we support female offenders, with greater emphasis on community provision. This ultimately benefits everyone, offenders, their families, and the wider community, as we see fewer victims and cut the cost of reoffending." Do you see what I mean? There's no mention of the victims there at all. All they're thinking about is how can we benefit the offenders and their families? How can we give them financial assistance, give them houses, do away with prisons for women? And yet there's no difference between men and women. We're all equal. And this is just enforcing equality, isn't it, really? I mean, you just can't be upset at this, can you, really, Max, that women are going to be treated like this while men are sent to prison? It's just, I couldn't believe it when I read this. And this is Sadiq Khan's flagship project for dealing with female crime. Reward them.
Yeah, it appears as Jeremy Corbyn once said, that certain people don't seem to be able to appreciate the British irony.
Yeah, I guess
that it's the lack of ability to appreciate irony is quite widespread in the mass media and in the upper echelons of our political system.
Wasn't that with the Jews that he said that? He said the Jews don't understand irony.
It was one particular Jew. It was actually, yes,
but Zionist Jews, they don't understand irony. I don't know. Is this ironic? I mean, it's just symptoms of broken Britain, really, isn't it? I mean, all these news stories today is broken from top to bottom, and the only way that it can be fixed is, you know, by nationalism. You have to have a nationalist ideology. You have to have nationalists that are in power that are going to make the changes to fix all of this, because it all stems from breaking away from that, breaking away from being loyal to your people and to your nation. And right from the top of these big patriotic get-togethers where they're censoring them, to the prison service where blacks and minorities are being given a free pass. I mean, if you're black and you're accused of a crime and you're under the age of 20, the judges have been told they must bear in mind that person may have suffered from racism when they were younger, and that may have led to them carrying out the crimes, so they shouldn't get a custodial sentence. So white lads will be sent to prison, But the blacks won't be because we've already got too many of them in there. And then you've got Sadiq Khan here who is saying, well, the way to deter women from carrying out crimes is to reward them with financial services and financial support when they actually get caught. I mean, how long is it going to take before the white man wakes up and realizes just what's going on here and that we need to fix this? Yeah. It's total clown world, isn't it?
It is. It's utter madness.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you want to add anything else here, Max, or if there's anything else you want to bring up. We're sort of nearing the end of the podcast here.
No, I think we've just about said all that can be said on these subjects for the time being. Let's save what we've got for next time.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Max. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Monday with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.